Hey, I'm Lucas from Germany and you're listening to The Sounds of Värmland. This podcast is a travelogue about my journey to explore some of the most beautiful lakes of the Swedish province Värmland by canoe. So you can either listen to this podcast in case you're thinking about a canoe trip for you and your friends and family, maybe you're already on your way to Scandinavia, or apart from my personal experiences, there is something in particular that I have recorded for you, Värmland's nature. So if you just want to experience the sounds of wind, forests, waves and animals, which is absolutely staggering, there are complete episodes for that. I personally love to listen to them when I want to sleep or when I need to be very concentrated, but check that out for yourself. In any case, you'll get to know the Värmland region and the vast and numerous lakes of Scandinavia. Also, if you want to see some pictures of that trip, you find the link to that in the podcast description. So lean back, relax, and welcome to the sounds of Värmland. Chapter 1, Prologue and Day 1. It is June 2022 in southern Sweden. We, which is my friend Joshua and me, arrive at Arvika, a city located between Oslo in Norway and Stockholm in Sweden. The province is called Värmland, and it's very famous for its vast number of lakes and rivers, which are a remnant of the last ice age. The region is barely populated, just an average of 16 persons living per square kilometer. In Germany, it's 282. Arvika is one of the bigger cities, and 5 kilometers away from its city center, there is Ingestrand. Apart from a huge camping site, there is the Arvika Canoe and Tourist Center, and Paul is the manager.
Dried milk, did you put a bag in?
Yeah.
Did you make one? Ziploc, 200 grams?
Yeah.
Did you put the sticker on it?
No, so a sticker.
Yeah,
I made some stickers yesterday. This will be a job to be prepared for next month.
He has invited us to be canoe explorers. I know him from Germany. For the next 5 days, small boat will be our home on our water hikes on the lakes and rivers of Sweden. After a night spent in a hut near the canoe center in Ingestrand, we are given our equipment in the morning. There are plastic barrels to keep our equipment from getting wet. Some are empty, others have food and kitchen stuff. At around 10 a.m., we get a short briefing from Johan, an employee of the canoe center. We sit down on a wooden bench under some pine trees. Johan has a large map of Värmland's lake landscapes with him.
Basically, enjoy nature, love nature, use nature, but don't hurt it, don't destroy it. Leave it as you found it, in a common sense, right? If you follow these simple rules, right, you will avoid being in conflict with nature or animals or people.
At first glance, I am struck by the sheer number of blue spots. There is more water than land in this area, and the possibilities to discover all the spots by canoe seem just endless.
You will come across a little small natural reserve on your starting point at Fåfängan, actually. I think it's a wetland. It's just a little tiny bit. You can go watch it, but you can't. But some certain rules apply there, that which I will cover later.
We are at the very beginning of the season in June. A few weeks before, there was still night frost, but during our week, it won't be colder than 10 degrees Celsius in the early morning. We find out where we are allowed to make fires and where we can set up camp. In Sweden, allemansrätten applies, which means everyone's right. So as long as you don't disturb or destroy anything or you invade private ground, you can camp basically anywhere. If you're interested in the whole introduction, you can just jump to that chapter. An hour later, we are in the car with Felix, one of Johan's colleagues. He drives us to our starting point. The atmosphere is relaxed. We joke a lot and talk about Swedish peculiarities like the high consumption of caviar from the tube or the early dinner. When we arrive at our destination, it starts to rain, and we learn right on the first day how important it is to have suitable rainwear. I am also very glad I invested in outdoor trousers, because they will prove to be one of the best investments in the coming days. A word of advice, never use jeans on the canoe, because they rob and get wet. We start our trip around 2 p.m. on the lake Bergsjön. This is one of the smaller lakes. We stow our luggage so that as much weight as possible is on the back of the boat. Our boat is a canoe made of aluminium, and it is called Canadian, because originally these Canadians were built of wood to transport furs, wool, and other goods through the rivers of Canada. So there is some space for all the luggage we have. But in order to fit well into the boat's body, you have to play a little bit Tetris. Because I've been river hiking in Germany before and I have a little more experience than Joshua, I sit in the back and steer the boat. We use duck paddles for that. Now, at the beginning, it takes me a few minutes to get back into it and we set off in a zigzag. This happens because I have to practice the C and J strokes in the water. These strokes are in the form of the letters C and J. And by using these two types of strokes, you can manage to keep the canoe straight without changing hands all the time. The strokes manipulate the water flow. So when you do the C stroke at the left side of the boat, the Canadian tends to the left. With the J stroke, it's the other way around. And the better you get at these strokes, the easier it is to steer the boat. By now it is already afternoon and the rain has increased in strength. After about an hour, we reach the first portage. This is a place where we have to carry the canoe. A small sign indicates the right place, which is not always easy to spot, to be honest. We carry barrel after barrel and bag after bag from one place to another. And then we find ourselves on a small river. Rivers, and we will notice this often during the journey, are much more pleasant to navigate than big lakes. On the banks, pine trees entwine on the barren ground, and rocks merge from the land into the water. Fields of reeds alternate with water lilies. In short, pure idyll. We take a short break for navigation. At the beginning, it is still difficult to orientate ourselves on the map, but that'll change. We don't want to overdo it for this day and therefore we look for a shelter and a place to sleep. On the map, some spots are marked with a red shelter symbol. So a few kilometers ahead of us, there is probably one just like that, on a lonely wooded island in the middle of some bigger lake. We decide to paddle there. The island appears on the horizon and suddenly we feel like in a film. From a distance, we can already make out the small huts that offer shelter for us and our luggage, but we won't need those this night. After mooring the boat, we inspect the place and prepare everything. We want to make a campfire and are looking for some wood. Unfortunately, everything's wet due to the rain, and we need some time to find suitable fuel. In a clearing, there is a fallen birch tree, which you can easily cut up with our large pocket knife. The bark in particular is perfect for starting a fire. And after more than 2 hours of work, which is setting up the tent, collecting firewood, cooking and some other things, we sit down on the rocks with a glass of scotch and look into the distance. And this is exactly how we had imagined it. Now, if you want to listen to the sounds of the boat on the lakes, you can just jump to that chapter. Chapter 2. We get to know the wind. I had a restless night behind me and therefore I get up overtired. During the night we heard the sounds of the forest and some animals must have sniffed the tent. At first, this actually scared me a little bit because I wasn't used to it at all. But at some point it's nice to listen to the hustle and bustle of nature at night. We prepare coffee and breakfast. It's 20 degrees Celsius and a few rays of sunshine show themselves. For our breakfast, it is not so easy to estimate the right amount of milk powder. Neither of us has ever tried this before, so we carefully feel our way to the right amount. In addition to our Trangia system, we have a gas cooker with us that will make coffee and tea every day from this day on. By the way, we use the Trangia system, which is a pretty ingenious multifunctional kitchen for cooking. Basically, the system is a spirit burner on which you can place different pot attachments. And after the meal, you just clean them and you can put them together again in a very compact way. And the whole thing takes up hardly any space. The Canoe Center in Arvika provides Trangia systems and I can highly recommend them. Around 11 o'clock, we are in the back of the boat. Dismantling and loading takes about 1.5 hours. On this day, we want to make good time and take a long route. At first, we make good progress on this day. We pass the village of Gunnarskog and end up in a large lake, Gunnern, which is divided into two arms. Actually, we should take the western arm, because this course is further along our route. But there is a supermarket on the eastern branch. We think that we need about half an hour to get there and half an hour each for shopping and for returning to the right arm of the lake. But the wind throws his banner in the works. For suddenly the gusts from small waves that get bigger and bigger and make paddling an effort. Rain is not the opponent of the water walkers, it's the wind. It takes us about an hour to reach the shore and the supermarket there, and we are completely out of breath. After shopping, we decide to eat on the shore, which becomes a turbulent affair due to the gusts. Afterwards, we set off again because we want to get out of this windy scene as quickly as possible. So, we make the mistake of sailing across the open lake. I highly recommend you never sail across the open lake. The waves are much higher by now and slosh into the boat. At the same time, I have to steer the canoe so that we don't get across the waves. We run the risk of capsizing. At this moment, it is important to just keep going and get to the shore as quickly as possible. It takes us about a quarter of an hour. After removing the water in the boat with a huge sponge and dressing warmer, our journey continues. 2 hours late, we are back where we actually wanted to be. But the afternoon is kinder to us. Finally, we make a lot of distance and then drive across a river and a few short portages into the small lake of Bjelvern. We want to camp on a small island again this evening and head directly into that direction. However, after a few minutes on the lake, we pass a section of shore where we see a shelter, fireplace and even firewood from the river. We decide to inspect the spot more closely and are completely thrilled with the location. It is not marked on the map. Wood is already piled up on the back wall of the hut. We start setting up camp, cook in peace and even jump into the water. A good long evening with a roaring fire and Swedish folk beer begins. If you want to listen to the sounds of the trees and animals and birds, just jump to that chapter. Chapter 3. Robinson Crusoe Beach in Dalen. We've overslept. And that is mainly due to the Hillenberg tent we got for our trip. Because the tent, which was actually designed for the military, is dark inside and makes it easier to fall asleep. Sun sets at 11:30 p.m. and rises at 3 in the morning, so you're really happy about every dark hour you get. On this day, it looks like the weather will be more merciful with us, and so we're not too worried. After the usual tidying up procedure, we begin our journey on a picturesque river that stretches quite a long way through the countryside. Our destination for today is Amundfors, but before we go there, we want to stop at the island of Öna, because there are supposed to be some remainings of a Viking settlement that we want to have a look at. The large lake we arrive at after the river is called Dalselven. It is S-shaped and ends at Amundfors, the village where we want to go to. The shape of the lake influences whether we have a tailwind, crosswind or headwind, depending on our orientation. As yesterday, the wind picks up again today and we have to reckon with a crosswind on the first crossing. But we are prepared and have moored and covered our luggage as best as we can. On the first crossing of the lake, after a lot of work and a short break, we arrive at a churchyard in Nye. There, we want to take a break. Nye also marks the place where the lake turns 90 degrees. After lunch with some sheep which came visiting us, the coming section is fun, because we have a tailwind and waves that carry us along. So canoeing suddenly feels a bit like slow surfing. We reach the end of this section in record time and can already see the Viking island of Una ahead of us. But to get there, the lake makes another 90 degree turn in the other direction, and the pleasant tailwind suddenly blows us sideways. We decide to abandon our plan with Una because crossing is out of the question at this point. We've learned from the day before. Instead, we sail close to the shore and try to fight the waves as best as we can. But at some point, the gusts are so strong that foam forms on the waves. We decide to get to the shore as quickly as possible. Problem? On this side of the lake, there are huge stones at the shores against which the waves crash. We fear that we will be also pushed against the stones. At a distance of 100 meters, there is a reed field that at least slows down the water masses a little. We reach the shore there, but immediately water sloshes into the boat. We bring the luggage into the dry and tip the boat. The waves crash against the aluminium body without pause. We have reached the steep beach that is clearly beaver territory. Numerous trees have been nibbled or have already fallen and blocking our way. At the same time, the wind blows relentlessly from behind. A little later, we have shimmied our luggage over tree trunks and brought it to safety. My clothes have been soaking wet and I hang them on a rope into the wind. The adrenaline of the past hour is just kicking in completely, and both Joshua and I, we feel like we've just braved the forces of nature. It's a nice feeling to sit on the log that juts halfway into the lake and just listen to the waves. However, we're exhausted. I mean, really exhausted. And in that jungle, we can transport a boat farther away from the shore. So we call the canoe center. Actually, we're only supposed to do this in emergencies, but this feels a bit like one right now. We get an announcement that the wind won't drop for the next 2 hours. So that would be waiting and holding out until 7 p.m. We decide to explore the area and see that we weren't the only ones sheltering their boat here. We see other canoe towed to the reeds a few meters away. The paddles are still in the boat, but there is no trace of the people. Only 100 meters away, a gravel path begins, which ends after 3 kilometers in Amat Force. Although the path is so close, for us it's not accessible. At least not with the boat and the heavy barrels. We give the weather another hour and then load the canoe again. It works after several attempts and tree branches that we put in front of the boat as breakwaters. Our strategy is to continue through the reed beds, but shortly after we give up this strategy. The waves have become stronger again and they push us back and forth in the water like a nutshell. We head for the shore, which fortunately is now a flat sandy beach with the big road only a few meters away. We call Paul from the canoe center, who picks us up with the boat and luggage about 2 hours later by car. He takes us to Amat Force. We eat some pizza and digest the horror. Paul then drives us to Lake Hugin. When we arrive there, we get back in our boat at a beautiful spot. Behind us, there is a small meadow. In front of us, the empty lake. As we say goodbye, Paul tells us that he has heard from a few boat groups that there's a great place to rest behind a nearby river bend. So that's a destination for today. Indeed, we arrived there after 20 minutes. But to be honest, the place undercuts our expectation tremendously. Firstly, it is close to a road. Secondly, it's very small. And thirdly, it's full of mosquitoes. This is nothing unusual for Sweden, but the sheer mass of mosquitoes in this place was unique on our trip. So our mood is depressed. We are exhausted, everything is still wet, and the campsite is a real disappointment. So for the first time, I just want to get home. I imagine my flat in Bonn, Germany, and especially my sofa. Joshua looks at me and we know we have to work on our mood. So we watch videos on how to make self-made fishing rods out of string and some wood. Of course, we know we won't catch anything at all with that, but having something to do helps in the situation. A couple of glasses of the whiskey are certainly not bad at this moment either. We throw our homemade carrot wobbler, which is a fishing hook, into the water and catch, watch out, nothing of course, but we have a lot of fun. Shortly after midnight, we decide to go to sleep and spend the night in the tent, which is dried out in record time. High quality equipment shows itself above in all these moments. If you want to listen to the storm and the waves, just jump to the chapter. Chapter 4. Sun, views, and colors out of this world. This morning the trip starts earlier than usual, because we know that we have to make up some kilometers today. The weather has eased and we set off in bright sunshine, a light breeze and 24 degrees. Lake Huguen is my favorite so far. It's almost deserted and surrounded by forested hills that are reflected in the calm water. The crossing takes less than half an hour in these conditions. The following rivers and lakes are also spectacular. Although the wind is roaring a little again, we always have to head south on this day, and thus have the wind on our side. We pass on small islands, fishing boats and private estates in Lake Renken. On this day, we will have the longest portage ahead of us, which is 5 kilometers. Therefore, we decide to take an extended lunch break. On the eastern shore, we find the perfect spot for it. Rocks had formed a kind of a natural terrace, and from the number of fireplaces, we can quickly see that we were not the only ones enjoying this spot. In a small bay, we can park the boat safely. We sit in the sun and enjoy the food, which tastes much better in this setting. We explore the rock formation a little and think that this would be the perfect place for the night. After the break, it is only a few hundred meters to the beginning of the portage. But it's a tough one. It's 5 kilometers that can be covered in different ways. Either on the paved road, which can be quite dangerous because of the cars, or over field and gravel path. We decide to do a mixture of both, as we want to buy firewood at a supermarket in Sulvig at the end of the portage. The portage takes us about 1.5 hours. We put the canoe on the wheels for this and carry the backpacks on our backs. At the beginning, I push at the back while Joshua pulls at the front. But later we realize that it's easier to use a trick Johan had shown us. We hold a paddle across, wind it through the boat loop at the bow of the boat and push the boat with it. This works really well, but the sun and the waves take their toll. The supermarket is close to the lake Glasfjorden. The canoe center is also on the shores of this lake. And so we know we have most of our way behind us. Our goal? To find a spot to the camp as soon as possible. Because we really did some kilometers today. But especially around the village Sulfeich, there are hardly any free spots. On the western shore of the coming lake, private land follows private land. And on the eastern shore of the lake, the reed zones are so dense that we can't possibly get through them by boat. So we have to continue. A meadow on the horizon turns out to be a horse paddock. So on we go. Still reeds. Reeds everywhere. A kilometer later, we find a rock formation jutting into the water. And in the forest, we spot a shelter and a fireplace. We think we've made it for today and we reach our destination. Finally, a place to rest after 30 kilometers of water hiking. Unfortunately, we are disappointed again, because we are at the outer end of Bergskletten Nature Reserve and camping is forbidden there. Shit. Luckily at this moment, a man with trekking luggage comes running out of the forest. He seems to be from the area and I speak to him. On the other side of the lake you can sleep almost anywhere, he says, and we would even have the evening sun there. So we decide to paddle this last section. After half an hour, we are on the other shore and the waves are again too high to continue in peace. We are on a beautiful beach, but it is surrounded by a fence and the grass is mown. So this is a sign of private property and we're not allowed to stay there. But we can't go any further and the waves make it impossible to continue. I wait until I see a young woman passing the compound. She tells me that she doesn't know the property well, but we could sleep there safely. Good, that reassures me. Only 15 minutes later, I see a man coming towards us with his grandson. He introduces himself as Johan and wants to jump into the water again with his grandson Mateo. He tells me that this is a plot of land belonging to the local community and that we are welcome to spend the night there. We chat a bit more and toast with a beer. And then we make ourselves comfortable on the sandy beach and let ourselves be enchanted by the light. Because this view is worth all the exertions of the day. The scenery consists of a golden ground tone, interspersed with splashes of red. In contrast, the lake shimmers in dark blue. The waves and reflections provide white accents, and the whole thing is completed with the light brown of the reeds and the lush green of the meadow. We sit there until shortly before midnight and just enjoy. Chapter 5. Barrows, the arrival and the first hot shower. This night was really fresh, especially since we didn't camp in the forest like the previous nights. Getting up is not easy, and the exertions of yesterday make me feel every single muscle. Because we don't have much distance ahead of us, we decide to pay another visit to the nature reserve. We cross the lake again and end up exactly where we wanted to sleep the previous day. We start a short hike through the area. Unfortunately, several hiking trails are closed at the moment because many of the trees are no longer stable. Due to the rocky subsoil, there are only shallow-rooted trees growing here. A storm can make quite a few of them unstable or topple over. On the path we can walk, however, we see remains of Bronze Age burial mounds. Most of the descriptions are only in Swedish, so we can more or less interpret the information. When we return to the rock, it's too warm there, and we retreat a few meters into the forest. We recover a little there and start the return journey to the canoe center in Ingestrand. That takes a good 2 hours. Around 3 p.m. we reach the shore. After some coffee and snacks, we put our boat on a jig to dry and return our equipment. This is exhausting one last time and costs some nerves. But the reward of a first hot shower in the canoe center quickly makes us forget that. In fact, in the evening we sit contently on the jetty and look out over the water. We have paddled for 5 days, braved waves, and have been brought to our knees by waves. We have sometimes underestimated and sometimes overestimated ourselves. But above all, I think we were quite a good team. The right equipment. After all you've been listening so far, if you're gonna do a trip like this, make sure you have the right equipment. This may sound like a platitude, but believe me, many people underestimate it. Very important, take good clothes and good shoes. We have a great experience with merino wool. Shirts and other clothes made of this material are quite expensive, but they dry super fast, don't stink much, and hardly let any wind through. It cools during the day and warms in the evening. The right trousers are also very important. They should definitely be long because of the many mosquitoes. Well, I brought a pair of zip-up trousers with detachable legs and lots of side pockets. So I was definitely kicked out of the list of fashion-conscious people by some friends of mine because of these trousers, but believe me, it was definitely worth it for the trip. Also worth their weight in gold are a pocket knife, gas cooker, water shoes and sensible rainwear. Joshua had a poncho, I had a jacket, and we were both satisfied. Since you probably can't store your luggage 100% in the bins, you have to be prepared for backpacks or suitcases to get wet. I bought a transport bag for my trekking backpack beforehand, And this turned out to be very useful because it reliably kept my backpack and clothes dry, especially in windy and rainy conditions. You can order tents, insulated mats, kitchen equipment, and sleeping bags from the canoe center. But I personally prefer to sleep in my own sleeping bag. And my secret favorite, a pair of knitted socks for my grandma. Of course, my feet and shoes were completely wet when we almost capsized. It also got really chilly in the evening. Being able to retreat into cozy woolen socks was definitely helpful. Apart from these larger items, don't forget sunscreen, headgear, and sunglasses, because the light can bang hard, and especially for a long time. We both had sunburns, and don't skimp on anti-mosquito material either. Better invest a little here. In the end, however, the most important thing is who you do it with. You spend a lot of time in a small space. You will experience one or two adventurous activities. It helps if you know each other quite well. And above all, don't overexert yourself and have fun. Me and Joshua, we will definitely get back at the start. So I hope I could give you some insights of our journey. If you have any questions, feedbacks or remarks, just send us an email at info@escucha.de. Sounds of Vermland is produced by Escucha Audio Identity in 2022. We thank for the support of the Arvika Canoe and Tourism Center.